Hello and welcome to the Awareness Connection. I'm James French, and I'm joining Ted Diamond here. Today we're going to be speaking about awareness and muscle tension. Before we get started, if you like this podcast, please give us a rating. Subscribe on YouTube. Give us a rating. You can find us on Spotify, on Apple Music. Really help out. So Ted. Yeah. One of the things that we want to do for this podcast, you know, like one of the things that you and I always talked about for this podcast is, you know, capturing these interesting conversations that we've had through the years, you know, sort of capturing the magic on recording. And it's one of the reasons that I really like doing these podcasts with you is to try to capture that magic in a bottle.
Yeah.
You know, so people can finally listen to these conversations with us.
Yeah. 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 Well, this is an interesting one because when it comes to muscle tension, we think that, you know, all we need to do is turn our awareness on it. And that's how we deal with it. You know, we have the ability to kinesthetically be aware of muscles. So if there's tension, we can maybe scan or do an exercise or something that focuses on muscle tension. But it's far deeper and far more interesting because we don't have muscle tension. You know, muscle tension is part of our behavior. Mm. And I think we need to talk about that part of it. And then we need to talk about how we can become actually aware of muscle tension and not just simply try to change it after the fact, you know, which really just amounts to a kind of therapeutic, you know, kind of way of trying to reduce it, you know, even though we're not actually conscious of what it actually is.
Yeah. Yeah, if all we're ever doing is like recovering, even if we're recovering well, that still means that we're not really conscious during our activities.
Yeah.
We're not really raising our consciousness level.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's what's really interesting about this. I mean, I don't think one of the most interesting things about your work is that, you know, the claim is made that it's actually possible you know, become more consciously aware during our normal activities, and that there's more that's possible than simply recovering afterwards and doing activities, you know, engaging in our normal activities at a conscious level is partially about not getting ourselves into trouble in the first place. You know, when it comes to muscle tension and bodily issues.
Yeah. Well, I think to begin with, I think when people have a problem with muscle tension, they're going to tend to think that there's something wrong at a bodily level. Mm. And in fact, that belief is so deep that we won't even look for the cause. We will be sort of desperate just to find someone who can help us address the condition. And sometimes people will be even relieved, you know, they go to the doctor and the doctor will say, well, you've got a pinched nerve, or you have a trigger point or something. And you kind of want to hear that diagnosis because it seems like, well, someone knows what the problem is and they can help me. The problem with that is that anyone who has had trouble with muscle tension knows that it will come back sometimes within minutes of reducing it or relieving it. And even then, you'll feel like a victim of the problem because you'll say, oh, well, what's causing that? Why does that happen? Yeah. And it takes more knowledge than that to get at the root of it. Mm. Yeah. And I think that's a key part of the problem, is to actually get to the point of being able to identify that muscle tension isn't a condition, but something that happens and that we actually do. And that's can be demonstrated, you know. So I think that's a good starting point, perhaps. Yeah.
Well, like, how do you want to start then? I mean, you know, it certainly seems like, you know, if you come in and you've got like crippling back spasms, then you certainly have a physical condition.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's certainly, you know, like, you know, your back hurts, and then, you know, you can go to a doctor who can accurately diagnose, like, you know, you've got spasming erector spinae muscles, for instance.
Yeah.
And so, like, you know, you certainly do have a physical condition. And so, like, what are you saying, you know, to help distinguish what you mean by it's, you know, not necessarily a physical issue?
Well, if you have that condition, it doesn't take much to see that it's connected with activity. So the person who's got shortened back muscles, all you need to do is demonstrate, even with a slight adjustment of the head, the balance of the head, these muscles in the back are ultimately, they're part of a whole system of muscles that goes from sacrum to occiput or head. And all you have to do is make a little bit of an adjustment to put a little more length on the system, and then ask the person to make a simple movement. Let's say they're sitting in a chair, and to come forward in the chair, and they will immediately shorten the muscles again. And that's a very easy, simple demonstration that the condition of tension is part of the problem, but it's only the tip of the iceberg, because the person is harmfully tightening the muscles as part of how they perform that simple action of coming forward or getting out of a chair.
Yeah.
And now a simple physical problem becomes psychophysical, because why are they making that tension as part of an act? Well, because the muscles are part of action. And you'll never have tight muscles separately from the actions that the muscles produce.
Yeah.
So that, and that gives us a starting point. What do you do about that? How do you make changes? How do you become aware of that?
Yeah. What do you do about it? I mean, you know, it's like, you know, there's like things that open up about this. Yeah. So the thread that we're going to follow then is like, what do you do about it? How do you make changes? You know, if it is related to your activities, what do you do about that?
Yeah. Well, trying to get the person to stop doing all that. First of all, it's not only not useful, because they won't be able to do much about it initially. If it's part of our habit, it's going to be very ingrained. Not only is it hard to change, but it's not particularly productive either, because now what are you trying to do? Get somehow control it right on the spot? You can't. Mm-hmm. So we do, as you said, there's a physical problem. So we want to see if we can bring about a better working of the back to some extent. Mm-hmm. And that's something we covered in the last talk. So the back muscles are, in fact, part of a larger tensegrity system, or part of a larger network of muscles. They're not meant to be overworking in the way that they will be if someone's got back spasms. Yeah. And if you put someone in a supported kind of position or posture that enables muscles to start to let go, now they can begin to experience for themselves, and also just have the improved condition that makes it possible not to tighten them so much. So the conditions improve. They're having the experience of having an improvement. They're beginning to identify that. Mm-hmm. And then if you now ask them to sit again, let's say you've had them lying down, or perhaps you've made these changes while they're sitting. If you then say, let's see about coming forward in the chair, but take your time, don't rush. And you get them to perform the action they made before, but a little more slowly, they could begin to see that, yes, they'll want to pull the head back. They'll want to shorten the back, and they could prevent that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, that's not the solution to the problem, but it's a beginning of educating the person in two of the elements. One is restoring muscle length, and two, using their kinesthetic awareness and their ability to make decisions about what they're doing, to begin to identify how they tighten the muscles as they begin to perform a movement. And now we're beginning to, you know, educate the person, beginning to become more aware of not just, you know, the condition, but what we're doing, an activity that's producing that condition or is connected with it. And now we're, you know, yeah. And it's only the beginning, but it's a good beginning.
Yeah. Yeah. This is like taking someone and sort of opening their eyes, you know, or, you know, like opening a pair of eyes that they didn't know that they had.
Yeah. You know, yeah, exactly.
This is like one of my favorite topics. You know, I think we talked about this in the first episode a little bit, you know, that we were going to get to this issue of perception.
Yeah.
You know, the podcast is about awareness, you know? And so, you know, yep. Like when I perception, it's sort of like, well, you were just saying, you know, it's not so easy for someone to see that, for instance, when they get out of a chair, that they're like tightening in their back muscles and it's sort of causing their problem. And so you've taken on a strategy of getting that person's back reorganized a little bit, you know, or better organized. So, you know, the muscles are functioning a little bit better. And that goes to last week's topic about the tensegrity organization.
Yeah.
So their back is working a little bit better. Their muscles are a little bit more on length. And then from that vantage, you can take them back into the chair, back out of the chair, you know, just as an example. And they can begin to see maybe for the first time that they're gripping themselves in order to get out of the chair. You know, they're disturbing that new, you know, better organization of the back. This is like a perception issue. This is a learning issue.
Yep. Yeah. And notice that we said at the beginning, awareness, we want what we think our awareness is something, a light that we could shine on the thing to make a change, but it's the other way around. You have to make the change as the foundation for becoming aware. And why? Yeah. Because awareness is, if a muscle is very tight, by definition, you're not going to feel what's going on.
Mm.
Whereas if a muscle is lengthened, especially if you've seen it lengthen, it's something that's now happened a little more at a conscious level, not just sort of done to you entirely, then the objective condition opens up the possibility of having clearer a perception of what you're doing.
Yeah.
So the change has to precede the awareness, not the awareness to make the change.
Yeah.
And that's because we have an objective system here, which is muscles and connective tissue and how they work.
Yeah.
So there is a very definite physical side, but we're not making the changes because we're trying to fix the back. And there is a lot to do with the back to get it to work better, but we're doing it partly to get the person to be more, you know, aware and begin to see.
This is that, you know, the metaphor, or, you know, the analogy here is like a biofeedback system.
Yeah.
You know, you're getting someone to see that there's some sort of like real, concrete, objective biological process going on, but you have to, like, in a biofeedback system, you display a measurement of that process going on a screen, you know, so someone actually gets, oh, like, okay, that, see, look, that happened. You know, you can like see their heartbeat on a screen or muscle messages on a screen. Here, it's your own physical organization, you know, it's your own back, it's your own muscles. And from the vantage point of getting them working a little bit better, you can see, you know, you're like setting up your own perceptual feedback system.
Yep.
I love that.
And you're not doing it. I mean, it's interesting that biofeedback, I mean, it was some of this work on biofeedback was done in the 60s. Mm. And it always struck me as interesting that it's such a fascinating kind of line of research, but it never went anywhere. And one of the reasons is because it's haphazard. I mean, are we a blank slate and you put stuff in the, you know, on the screen and then it's what you don't want, you get rid of it. I mean, we're not a blank slate. I mean, there is a way the system is designed, but when you approach muscle tension as sort of an evil that's just got to be gotten rid of, mm-hmm. and many approaches are kind of like that, mm-hmm. then you have practice without theory. It's blind. It has no vessel, no structure.
Yeah.
So you're, and I was sort of like that when I had first had back trouble. I was trying to relieve it. And most people are. I just wanted to get rid of my tension, but then I'd be more collapsed than before and didn't know what to do with it.
Yeah.
And here we're not an empty vessel. We're not a blank slate. We're saying muscles, we have an idea how they work.
Mm-hmm.
The muscles are meant to lengthen. And we're now looking at preventing what we don't want. We're not trying to figure out what we do want. Nature does that for us if we have some understanding of how nature works. So it's a now we have a biofeedback mechanism, but not an aimless one. We have a biofeedback mechanism that is grounded in some real structured knowledge about how the system works. So that's makes it way more useful.
Yeah, sure.
Organized and, you know.
Sure. Yeah, like the early biofeedback studies, you're right. They're sort of like demonstrations of principle. You know, you can plug in a certain part of the body and there's a readout on a screen, and then somehow we can, you know, since it's a muscle, it's sent messages by the central nervous system, by us, so to speak, and we can modulate what we see on the screen, you know. And similarly here, though, like we're witnessing the unconscious messages, so to speak, that we're sending to muscles. You know, like when you have someone get out of the chair and they find that they disturb this new organization that you've helped to bring about, they're in some sense witnessing like a set of messages that the central nervous system has sent those muscles that they maybe didn't realize that they were sending.
Yeah. But now this brings up, you know, you brought up the idea of muscles getting messages. So if we see that the harmful messages are coming through to the muscles, which they certainly will be when the back is tight, we're stopping that. We're getting the muscles to work better. We're identifying the thing we don't want, and we're learning to stop it. But at this point, we can't do much more than stop it and give the person the experience of using the back with a little more ease and length and muscles.
Yeah.
And then replacing the old messages with a new message, which is don't tighten, to let the parts move away from each other. Or that's one way to express it. And they begin to, you know, replace old direction with new direction as a kind of a relearning process to see how the body can work more easily. Now, they're not going to be able to maintain that inactivity on their own because the old messages are too powerful and will, when they go back to, let's say, real life activity, you're not going to be able to go play football and think it's going to be okay. But they will be able to experience it coming out of the chair, performing some actions. So now they're learning the art of stopping the old messages, bringing about a better working of the system, and they're beginning to educate their kinesthetic system in how to stop interfering and how to notice when they're doing that harmful activity. And they can begin to experience a lightness effect, more ease, more length, more tone in muscles. And that's a good start.
Yeah, the beginnings of like the restoration of the tensegrity function.
Yeah.
You know, like the...
starting to restore the PNR system, the natural working of the postural system.
Mm.
So at this point, we're not, you know, you and I are talking about direction or, muscles receiving messages. We see that muscles are not just in a condition. They're getting messages all the time. They work inseparably from the parts of the brain that are sending messages and organizing how those muscles work. But we're not obsessing over that because we want to give the person the experience of how that overall PNR system can work again the way it did when we were young children.
Mm-hmm.
And that's our real goal at this stage.
All right.
So we're working with direction. We know there's a psychophysical problem, not just a physical problem, but in order to give the person more experience in how the body can work efficiently and effortlessly. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and most people will identify those stages still as being physical, and that's fine.
Yeah.
The student will say, yeah, I know that there's something I'm doing that's harmful, but I like how it feels. I want more of that. That's okay. Because they're, yeah. you know, they yeah. quite understandably want to feel better.
Yeah, sure. Sure. And that's the resolution of their physical problem. You know, they come to you with like, you know, tension, you know, with like a really sore back, or like the, you know, like you and I have been talking about, you know, the shoulder issue lately, you know, the shoulder doesn't seem to work. And through educating someone like this, you know, seeing that that sort of the way that they're performing their normal activities is that their use of their own muscle system is causing the whole thing to get sort of tied up and twisted and you say shortened, you know, like, you know, the tensegrity structure is getting malfunction-y, you know?
Yeah.
And it's causing these like symptoms that they're coming to you with. And through educating somebody about this, those symptoms can be resolved. Like, you know, the shoulder can go, you know, the muscles can release, the shoulder can sort of like come back into place, float on the back. It feels really nice. But then, just like you said before, I mean, it always comes back. Always comes back, because it's not really a physical issue. It's about how you're performing your activities. It's about the tension that you bring into your activities that's leading to the physical symptoms that you're experiencing.
Yeah. Yeah, and that, you know, and that's the whole, the underlying problem is psychophysical, but the student won't know that and won't accept that for a while, because until you recognize, fully understand that you're doing this, there's something that happens in action as a result of your own activity, you'll keep reverting to the idea that there's something wrong with the body. Mm-hmm. But the meaning of psychophysical is that there is no such thing as a body working separately from the mind. Mm. Even when you're reading a book, it's a psychophysical activity, because the act of reading the book, which certainly is cognitive, complex, various cognitive complexes like interpreting the words and thinking about the meaning of the words, etc., it's still a total psychophysical activity that involves holding the book, adjusting your eyes to the words, mm-hmm. Maintaining posture while you're reading the book. I mean, the whole process of reading is not mental, it's physical and mental. And likewise, if you're throwing a football, it's not just physical, it's clearly a mental process, because you're having to adjust what you're doing, adjust the use of your hand, observing what's going on, observing how you're moving, so any action, whether physical or mental, is psychophysical. Mm. And that's what we're looking at here. And in many ways, that to me is the key to one of the keys to this whole subject. Mm. And all the different methods that try to look at that back problem as fascia, muscle tightening, tight muscles, imbalanced muscles are missing fundamentally psychophysical nature of the problem. Mm. And if you don't ultimately, I don't care how much change you make and how wonderful it feels, if you can't identify the underlying activity, the psychophysical activity that's causing it, and ultimately you're not empowering the person to identify that, then you're ultimately missing the boat, and you're really just, you're performing therapeutic changes in the name of education. Because it's not ultimately it's not a physical problem. Anyway, I just want to mention that, because that's key, even though there's so much about the problem that we need to understand even at the physical level.
Yeah. Well, what about this? You know, the notion that you can you know, get someone's body working better, you know, they come to you with this or that problem, and whatever your theory is about what's actually wrong, whether it's fascia or, you know, trigger points or structural or whatever, you know, you can work on that and get it resolved and the person feels great. But then, of course, you know, they go back to swinging their tennis racket and then the problem comes back. So it's like, yeah, of course, you know, but like, what about when someone comes to you and says, you know, like, what if someone offers an analysis of like inefficient movements? You know, you've seen this before, like, you know, your racket swing, you know, you're twisting unnecessarily here, you're twisting unnecessarily there, you know, maybe you're like eroding your rotator cuff. Maybe we can fix it by you know, like moving a little bit differently or moving better. How is what you're saying different than that? Because I know it is.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, first of all, those things are that's just biomechanics. And if you break it down biomechanically, you're still going to pull your head back when you do it. In fact, even if you say don't pull your head back as part of the biomechanics, the moment you actually engage in the activity, you'll pull your head back because it's part of how you feel it's part of what feels right when you perform the movement. So no amount of trying to, you know, fix it is going to change your own habit because it's psychophysical. It's part of how you perform the action, including how you try to change the action.
Yeah. 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 That's like the elephant in the room there. Like this is the, you know, this is the thing where, okay, well, you know, I could just sort of change how I move. We believe that we change how we move.
But
if you were really going to look at, you know, like, if you were totally honest, or let's say, you know, you can hook your entire body up to like a biofeedback machine, even if you tried to change how you move, it would still show up on that screen.
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. There's no getting away from it.
Exactly.
And it's that's what we have to address. Like that's the whole thing that we have to address.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, so imagine just to take it even further, let's say that you get to the point that you're able to stop interfering with muscles. You're able to think about when you identify how you've tightened and you've organized your awareness so that the system as a whole can work better. Let's say you've done all of that. The system is now working better. You're able to stop in an activity and not entirely go back to your old way of doing it, even when you know, let's say move out of a chair or do something. When you're able to stop the old directions or old messages from going through, and you're able to keep the new messages going through, and are able to perform the action in a completely different way, now you're becoming conscious in action. And that's not simply being aware or trying to, you know, be mindful while you perform an action, because being mindful while you perform an action, you're still going to do the action unconsciously.
Yeah.
That's now you've actually identified the unconscious operation of habit. You've prevented it and you've replaced it with conscious messages. That's a higher attainment or level of understanding. And when you get to that point, then you can begin to look at actions like, how do I vocalize, or how do I hold an instrument? Can I apply this? And then you can begin to apply it in complex activities, but that's a higher level of skill or a higher attainment.
Yeah. And, you know, it ties into what you were saying before about, you know, the awareness comes after the changes, you know, the awareness doesn't cause the changes so much as the awareness comes about because of the changes. Like how else would you identify, first of all, that you're tightening in your activities, you know, that you're shortening? Second of all, how would you identify, how else, yeah, or, you know, like, let me just put the question to you, like, how do you identify when you're working at that level, whether the normal messages that you're sending your muscles that caused the problem in the first place are coming through or not? How do you identify that?
Yeah, you actually asked the same question like 2 weeks ago.
I really like that question.
Yeah.
You know, I can't stop.
The answer is
I'm not boring our audience here.
No, when you're actually, when the system is working well, you could begin to distinguish the old way from the new way. So that's one way. You can actually feel it.
Yeah.
You could feel that you revert to the old way.
Yeah.
You can also tell when you stopped giving the conscious messages and the old messages take over. So there's several ways you could see, if you observe in a mirror, sometimes you could see what you're doing.
Yeah, like, you know, the actual physical, you know, for example, you know, like the pulling back of the head or lifting chest or whatever.
Yeah. And don't forget, when you've got the system working completely, when you've restored the system, mm-hmm. You're not just getting back to where you were as a kid when it was working typically with 2-year-olds, let's say it's working quite beautifully. You're not just going back to how they were. You're going back to the way they were, but at a conscious level. And at a conscious level means it's already much more conscious. You have an appreciation. You can appreciate, you can weigh, you can identify what's different now, in a way a child doesn't, because they're just in it. They're just doing it. They don't know it's happening. And that alone is something you can carry into activity.
Yeah, totally.
And then so the quality of awareness is already kind of an emergent quality when you're able to restore the system at a more conscious level.
Mm.
But then the direction itself becomes another component that you could see. And when you could see the two things and you could identify mentally, when you go back to your old way of doing it, it's a kind of an insight. It's a level of mental insight that's now happening psychophysically, because you can stop the old action from happening the way you usually will or decide to do things.
Hmm.
So several components become conscious.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, there's that, you know, you just said about, you know, the whole process is an increase in consciousness. And it's, and a lot of it, you know, this is something that always strikes me. It seems like it's really about comparing a previous state to a new state. You know, it's like, I mean, a lot of it is really comparison. You know, if you start out with your, you know, with your back arched unconsciously, you don't really know it. And then all of a sudden the muscles around your back and your shoulders start to give way, and the system starts to right itself. You're like, this is different than before. This is something that I didn't know about. This is much different than before. This is, it seems to be a comparison issue.
Yeah. Well, that, yeah, certainly at that level, that's for sure. Yep.
Like
certainly. If you shortened and you've restored length.
Yeah.
If you shorten your back and you've restored length in the back muscles in the trunk, it's so dramatically different.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can't help but see that. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if I want to get too philosophical here. I remember there was a philosopher whose works that I encountered, who was writing about the topic of, like, you know, how do you judge the value of any given experience? You know, if you don't assume universal outside values that are giving them to you, some of it has to be internal. Like there are experiences that you just know are, whether it's healthier or, like, I don't know, they're just, like, internally judged better than other experiences. And it's like, man, like when you come along and your shoulders are, like, frozen and tight, it just seems kind of obvious. Like, you know, the body winds up working better than it did when you came in. It's just, I don't know, it's just more buoyant. It's just more, it's, I don't know. It's just a lot.
Yeah.
Just a lot to, you know, it just seems obvious to say, but yeah, like very clearly in comparison, you say, this is something that I really want. This is something that I'm going to continue to work toward.
Yeah, no, I can imagine someone saying, well, how do you know the muscles shouldn't be tight? Well, yeah.
That's, yeah, exactly. You know, Diamond, is this just like some theory? You know, is this just your view? You know, but like, you know, you're standing there and it's like, you know, to put the theory words on it from last week, the tensegrity structure has like started to work again. It's like, this is how the back works. This is how the body works. You just sort of know it. It's like a, I don't know if that would qualify as an insight.
Well, it's more than that. I mean, you could put it in evolutionary terms. If your back's hurting and you can't sit for 10 minutes without your back hurting, and if you have to sit for an hour and it just gets worse and worse until you're laid out with a back, well, something's wrong. And obviously we are meant to be able to sit for long periods or stand for long periods or walk for long periods with a minimum of effort. Mm-hmm. And that's clearly a higher standard, and nature is clearly going to look for that. You can see it throughout nature. That's not my judgment. That's objective. So I wouldn't even make it so subjective as to say, well, how do you know? Well, you know, because one person is able to perform a function easily with a minimum expenditure of energy and the other person can't. I mean, it's fairly obvious.
Yeah.
Same is true with the use of the voice. Same is true with the ability, you know, standing on your legs, various parts of the body.
Yeah.
Effort is often a guide to, efficiency of function.
Yeah. 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 And those two different people might be one person before and after, no?
Oh yeah. I mean, when someone is having trouble with their back, they're not kidding around. They might not be able to, a musician may be crippled and can't play anymore. It's pretty clear. And then when they regain the ability to, let's say, raise their bow arm or support an instrument, and they could play comfortably for an hour, they say, this is, obviously improved function. And it goes back to how they were before they developed the problem. And there's just no question about it. There's no question that the muscle's healthier. If you looked at muscle tissue that's distressed, it can't get rid of waste product. It's overworking. It's bunched up. It's the tissues are unhealthy. Even the skin tone is affected. I mean, the whole, and not to mention the entire body becomes overworked. People are in a distressed state. I mean, you could see it sometimes in someone's when the whole body is tense, you could see that there's a higher level of stress happening. Breathing is impaired. So there's so many objective factors, really.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, this whole issue of, muscle tension and awareness, it's a really deep topic, and there's so many strands to pull here. There's someone who's physically distressed, like they're not just physically distressed, when their normal movements, when their normal way of going about things has led to this sort of collapse in function, and you get them out of that, their whole mood can change. Like their whole sort of experience of the outside world can change. Their attitude, their way of thinking, like you can just watch this, I've watched it in myself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a whole topic right there. Yes. Yeah. Their demeanor, their stress level, their level of attention. So that when a person who is that person who first came with the back trouble and their back is hurting and they're worried about the condition of the back, one of the symptoms or one of the signs of a problem is that when you then say, well, let's move, you make a change in the back so it's a little bit less tight, and you say, let's see if we can identify what you're doing, and you see them, they forcibly pull their head back, shorten the back, arch the back. Well, along with that, because it's psychophysical, you'll see how preoccupied they are with the act. They've usually gone a little bit out of control in what they're doing. They're using too much effort. They're unthinking. They're often in a bit of a state because now they're worried about their health. And all of that is discernible in their mental state, which is going to be affected and sort of dominated by the problem. Mm-hmm. And as you say, when the system quiets down and you get them more balanced, you'll see a whole change in their mental state, such that they will become more alert, less worried, more preoccupied, and you could begin to reach them. You could begin to reach the part of their mind that was previously unreachable. Mm. So they become less hypnotic and more more open and reasonable.
Mm. Yeah.
Which goes to the whole issue of awareness here, because we've now done several talks on physical parts of this system, body awareness, the tensegrity system, now muscles and the messages they get as part of a psychophysical pathway. But we're also going from a less conscious way of doing things to a more conscious level. And I was thinking maybe we'll do that next week, where we could talk about awareness levels a little bit and why we are really speaking here about becoming more conscious and what that means, because there's really a lot to that question of what parts of us are becoming more conscious and what parts are not conscious.
Right. Yeah. Really excellent way to go forward.
Yeah. I think it'd be interesting to do that, just to shake up the topics.
Yeah. It's very easy. We were speaking before the podcast recording started about how easy it is just to sort of focus on physical topics in this subject. And it's like a little bit deceptive. The physical topics I find very compelling and very, very interesting. But ultimately, that's not really what we're talking about here. We didn't name the podcast like body talk or something like that, like the body connection,
Right. If you did, I wouldn't be part of it, because it's not
exactly,
absolutely. And how and why this is part of a process of becoming more conscious is part of what the field is about that needs to be identified. Mm-hmm. I mean, you could say that you do body, you do some kind of body work or some body awareness system. You say, "Oh, I feel much better." Well, number one, I don't really care, because feeling better is not much of a gauge of anything. And it's usually really temporary. But mm-hmm. also, it doesn't identify to me what's really, in what way are you informing the person? In what way is it a meaningful change where their consciousness is in some way heightened, such that you can identify the stage where we were less conscious and the stage where we are more conscious? And just to say you feel better, or it's associated with sort of more freedom of movement, or perhaps these stressors that get to me, it's a little bit of a romantic idea that stressors are causing all this. And if I can, when I free up the body, I feel better and less stressed. Those things are not a sign of progress, but a sign of not being clear about what the field really entails. Mm. The real meaning of all this is that you're learning. We're taking the process of action to a more conscious level. Mm. That's the thing that inspired me to do this as my work. And by the way, speaking of that, I just want to remind viewers here that the book that we have that is available on sale, Sensory Motor Awareness, is kind of the curriculum, the practical curriculum for learning this subject, for putting it into practice, not just as a sort of a therapeutic method, but as an actual learnable stage, practical discipline that could be learned in stages. It's available on Ingram Spark, which makes it available to your favorite bookstore. You could find it on our website as well. Anything else I should mention? As always, thank you all for joining us.
Yeah. Just make sure to find us on YouTube and subscribe and like. Find us wherever you get your podcasts and rate us. They really do help. Ratings really do help. That's just sort of the world that we're in right now. But yeah, if you like the podcast, please share it on social media. We just want to reach more people, and we want to continue having these interesting conversations.
Yeah. On that note, thank you, everyone. We'll see you next week, and we're going to talk, I think, maybe on the topic of awareness. Yeah. Stages of awareness. Great.
Thanks.
Thank you. Thanks, James. Awesome.